Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
And good morning. You're listening to the Community Living Radio here on the NCRA networks and broadcasting from CITR UBC 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And we have a special guest on the phone today. Her name is Kathy Brown, and she's a photographer here in Vancouver. I would say that she's a pretty famous photographer here in Vancouver, but she's a special photographer, and I'm actually going to bring Kathy on right now to explain to you what is so special about Kathy. Okay. Good morning,
Good
Kathy.
Morning.
Are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
I am doing great.
Good, good.
It's a great day out there.
The introduction.
Well, I'm a fan. What can I say, right?
Well, thank you. And you know, you can only let your fans say that you're special. You don't say you're special yourself. But I've had a 40-odd year career in PR, which, you know, was all about telling people stories and evolved into adding social media to the mix, and it seemed to be in a natural kind of progression to move into photography to add another layer to the storytelling. I guess what makes it unusual, or as you say, special, is that I'm legally blind. I have 10% vision in one eye and nothing in the other. And for some strange reason, the camera and I communicate very well, and I enjoy capturing, you know, moments in time. I'm not the kind of photographer who's going to hang around and pose people. I just want those moments that I'll remember forever, and it's my way of capturing, specific events or memories that I haven't seen at the moment, but the camera will let me review it later and enjoy those experiences all over again.
Yeah. So that is one of the fun parts of photography is you get to capture that moment and then revisit it later on in time and time again. What I enjoy out of your work is seeing what you see, you know,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
every image is how you see it. And I may not have seen it the same way through my lens as a photographer myself. So
So, and isn't that the wonderful thing about photography? Because it is so subjective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at a world and saying, this is what I want. I don't know what anyone else is going to get from this moment or, you know, this activity or this, you know, this event. But this is what I want. And I enjoy capturing images in a way that probably other people won't even think of. And that's part of the joy of it. It is you as much as it is, you know, the other image.
Yeah, it totally is, you know. I did do something interesting one time. I let somebody borrow my camera. As you know, I went on that 40-day walk across British Columbia, and I let somebody walk off with one of my cameras. I said, come back and you show me what you see in the world. So it was a little scary and rather interesting, the result of that. So, because everybody sees something different.
We all do, and I think it doesn't really matter how much sight you have. It's what you take from the situation. And you know, I encourage people who, you know, have limited vision and think that they can't do this. You can, and it will be very satisfying because it will be your world and it will be your interpretation of it. And I would encourage people to do that.
Yeah. So, you've been a photographer for how many years now? Again?
Well, I think like most of us, I think we've always dabbled in it. You know, from the early days, I mean, God, when I remember when I got married over 35 years ago now, the Monsignor who married us actually pulled out one of those little Instamatic cameras out of his pocket at the end of the ceremony with those little square flash cubes and actually took a picture of us. And I, you know, and in those days, we all had those little cameras and, you know, spent scads of money on developing film and everything else. I think what was so liberating was, you know, the start of the digital cameras and the fact that you could take as many pictures as you wanted and you didn't have to worry about, you know, how much waste there would be. And you could just have fun with it. And, of course, I started to have fun with digital cameras, God, I guess back in, oh, God, at least 10, 15 years ago. But, you know, I didn't really take it seriously until I had an opportunity about 10 years ago to go to Japan and Taiwan. And I kind of thought then, you know, this, I want to bring something back that's more than just, oh, here's this, you know, tourist attraction or that tourist attraction. I really want to tell the story because it was so special. And that's when I started actually formulating, you know, a thought in my head in terms of what I wanted to capture. And for me, it wasn't necessarily the tourist attractions. You know, I got the odd temple and some nice, you know, landscape and all that sort of thing. But really what I wanted to capture then was things that I wouldn't see elsewhere. And so I took shots of a lot of different architecture. I took shots of, you know, little crowds of school kids all in their little sailor uniforms. I took pictures of the funny parking lots because you would drive your car into like a little pod, and the pod would go upwards and disappear, and another pod would come and take its place. You know, things that we don't see, and that's the way I captured the trip, and it just kind of evolved in that. I think when I got serious and actually got a DSLR with lenses I could change was shortly after my husband died about 5.5 years ago, and I needed something. I needed something to channel, you know, my energies. I needed something to focus me. I needed something that would make me happy. And that was the beginning of really being serious about what I was doing. And I think in a lot of ways it's been a lifesaver because it really developed and still is a real passion of mine now.
Yeah, it shows in the imagery, the passion that you put behind it. Yeah.
And sometimes it's quite accidental.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just, oh, well, maybe I should take that and have to, and that's also the joy of having, you know, smartphones with good cameras these days. You don't have to always have the big equipment with you. You can capture a moment. And I sent you several things yesterday just to show you kind of a range of things I've done. And a lot of those were cell phone shots. They weren't necessarily the big Nikon shots. They're just shots that you say, oh my God, I should grab that, you know? Yeah. And so that's part of the joy of, I think, photography being so portable and so immediate that, it's a totally different world now.
It is a totally different world. I first started in photography myself. I've always had, and here's where we might differ a little bit, I've always had a Canon. I had
the Nikon camp and the Canon camp.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But I had the very first Canon EOS film, the film camera when they first released the EOS lens system, and
oh wow,
it's like the lenses still fit my digital camera, so I still use a lot of my film lenses. So that was one of the reasons why I stay Canon. The whole thing is it has evolved. Your cell phone, you can take a really great picture. And that was one of the things that you were talking about. The first time I actually physically met you, I found your photographs, but the first time I actually met you, I was filming because we have a friend in common, Ricky Shetty. You were speaking at one of Ricky Shetty's events, and I was filming it.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah.
We were a panel of three photographers.
Yeah, and you went into some of that, how you can still get great shots. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as long as you have a camera to capture the moment. It doesn't matter, right? So.
Well, and I think part of it is that, you know, the way I've learned to kind of adapt to limited vision to the extent that I have it is that I'm very observant. I pick up on detail. I'm constantly looking and watching and learning all the time because it helps me be comfortable in my environment. And I think because I've kind of picked up that way of dealing with life is that it makes the photography a very natural kind of occurrence because I'm already kind of always watching.
Yeah.
So it kind of made sense that I would be able to, you know, capture these odd moments that are so fleeting and they're gone in a second, but I've got them.
Yeah.
And there's such a thrill about that. There's such a wonderful, you know, feeling when, because I don't really see the pictures on the camera because they're too small. So, you know, I download everything on my iMac. And then there's that moment where the picture comes on the screen. You kind of almost gasp and say, my God, I got that. I can't believe I got that. And you know, it's a wonderful feeling, actually.
Yeah. Now you sent me some of your favorites, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go through and I'm going to find some of my favorites. And when I actually post this on that I talked to you today on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So, But one of them that you sent is a dew-covered rose.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not the perfect rose, but it's a stunning rose in the fact that all the with the dewdrops and everything, it's like the perfect point in morning where there's a dew there and everything's calm, you know? So
It was an amazing experience. That was actually in Portland, in the Portland Rose Garden, which is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful place. If you ever get to see it, it's just wonderful. And it had just rained, and being Portland. And it was just that being in the right place at the right time. You know, that was not a cell phone shot. That was an iPhone shot. But I really enjoyed capturing some of those roses. But it's such a dramatic shot that it is still one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And that goes back several years now.
Yeah, that's an amazing shot. And
Thank you.
And I'm going to be honest with you that since I don't have any visual impairments other than old age, I can't see to read anymore without glasses. But that's something else altogether. You know what? You don't know that you captured the moment until you actually sit down and it's like, and it comes up on the screen.
Yep.
It doesn't matter who the photographer is. You see everybody looking. Yep. They look in there and at the camera, and it's like, did they get that? Did they get that? And it's like, you don't know that you actually got it until you actually sit down to review everything. So,
well, it's kind of a reflection of life. You don't know what you're capable of until you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, sometimes those moments of revelation when you look at the screen and say, "My God, I got that. I'm so pleased." It kind of does pattern life. You can accomplish an awful lot, and you can overcome an awful lot, even if, you know, if you're sort of rationally thinking about it, you say, oh, I could never do that. Well, you can. You know, it's just when you're in the situation, it can happen. And, you know, I had a wonderful moment a couple of years ago. There's a huge event in Vancouver called Dîner en Blanc, and it's a gathering of, you know, about 4,000 strangers who all wear white and all sit down to dinners that they bring. But it's a gathering, a community, and it's very special because it's a sea of people, and it's all white. And I was invited to photograph it, and it was really interesting, and I ended up shooting half of it in color and half of it in black and white. And there was a moment near the end when they had one of those aerial acrobats who, you know, hangs on cloth strips and does, manipulates all kinds of stuff in the cloth strips. And I just kept taking pictures of those people. And one of them came up on my screen when I got home, and I literally started to cry because it is one of the most interesting shots I've ever taken, and I couldn't find it yesterday, but I will send it to you because it's really neat, and it was one of my black and white shots. But I literally sat there and cried at the absolute joy of doing something I thought I would never be able to do. And it's neat. It really is wonderful. You know, it makes your heart stop every once in a while.
Okay, well, we need to take a break here for station ID, and
all right,
we'll get right back to you, okay?
Okay, I'll still be here.
I see miracles every day.
Listen,
radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
On Labor Day weekend, September 2nd to the 4th, it's the Bumper Shoot Festival 2016 in Seattle, Washington. The festival's got a little something for everyone, with music, comedy, arts, culture, and food. Featuring Chastity Belt, So Pitted, Dude York, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Death Cab for Cutie, and more. Passes are on sale now, so head on over to bumbershoot.com.
All right, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay. Wait, hold on. Does this make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we. You're not even gonna last. All right.
Victoria's pretty good. Not bad festival. Fountain. Just back from France. Montreal? What the f***?
It's the script!
What? Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival. Fountain, okay, just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a f***ing elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR production department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
And we're back here on the NCRA Networks and at UBC CITR 101.9 FM. And we're speaking this morning with Kathy Brown, one of Vancouver's more famous photographers. So,
God, now I got to live up to that hype now, you know, Michael.
Yeah, well, you know I'm a hype guy, right? So, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's fairly true that you're at least a very popular figure here in Vancouver. A lot of people know you. We know a lot of people together. I should say way.
Oh yeah. So yeah. Well, and I think that you know, I haven't been here long. I've been here about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of what I guess has built a community for me were a couple of things. I think my husband and I moved here from Ottawa, and I thought the climate and everything else would be better for him at that stage. And social media certainly played a huge part in me getting into a community quite quickly. I think the other element to that was the fact that, you know, the Olympics was that year in 2010. You know, there were so many events and so many things happening that, you know, I got involved with quite a few things during that year. And that certainly helped build a community. And when he ended up in the hospital for the last almost 6 months of his life, the community really rallied. And I think, you know, if anything illustrates the very positive aspects of social media, because you hear so much negative, I can only point to my own experiences and say that, you know, the community I have here and built here was one of the reasons I actually stayed. And, you know, didn't go back east because I had such a wonderful community here, and I still do. So I think, you know, one of the reasons that I am, you know, as you say, known is because so many people have been so good and reached out and been so supportive and so wonderful. I think, you know, and I'm always grateful for that, but I think, you know, there's always another side of the coin, and it's an interesting struggle that anyone with a disability, I think, encounters, and I still encounter, is the fact that I do wonderful stuff and I do good work, but the hard part is being paid for it. Most of what I do, I don't get paid for. I do it because I love it, but I also do it to prove a point. But there's that little line that doesn't get crossed too often, and is always a source of some frustration and disappointment in terms of just not being that much good enough, even though I would gladly hold my stuff up against anybody else. I mean, I haven't got a studio, I haven't got staff, I don't have, you know, I've never actually, you know, had photography lessons. This is all kind of stuff I've learned as I've gone on, and I can always improve, but getting the odd little paid gig is, you know, would add a lot of credibility to what I do. So it's a constant search for that acknowledgement and credibility. And also, you know, it's been touched upon by people a lot. And it's that whole area of being, you know, quote unquote, an inspiration. That is a word I kind of cringe at, because I think it, in a way, I think it puts you in a category and sets you apart in a way that you don't want to be. I want to inspire, because to inspire someone is to actually, you know, it's an active verb. You actually have someone do something because of an example you've set. But I find that if suddenly you're called an inspiration, it's kind of this little sandwich board that suddenly appears around your neck, and you're labeled with that. And it's not something you want. You want to have people encouraged and motivated and inspired to do things for themselves and perhaps for others because of the example you set. But just don't have the label. It's just not what you want. So that's my, you know, that's my thing. And also because I'm, you know, 62, there's always a little bit of ageism too out there. And that's, you know, so which is why I, you know, make sure I damn well don't act 62.
I was going to say, you were 62. One, I didn't notice that part. And two, do you think that it matters that people see 62?
Oh, well, you know, the older you get, the more you realize it does. You know, and I would love to roll back about 20 years and perhaps get more opportunity. I think it does. And, you know, I don't even think that people necessarily realize that there's some ageism that goes on. I think it's, you know, what you'll get are messages like, well, you know, you wouldn't want this job because, you know, you've done so many things and you're such senior positions and you'll get bored or you'll get this or that. Not really.
I've heard that myself, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a widow with no kids and, you know, on a fixed income, and I would like to have life a little different. I would like to be able to, you know, have a little bit of fun money to do stuff just because I want to. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody wants that. And I think once you get to this age, you know, you think you would like to do that. But, you know, I'm not saying I don't love what I do, because I do. But, you know, there's a reality in actually, you know, having to earn a little bit here and there. And so, you know, it's something I never give up. I never say, okay, that's it, I won't do it. And I never say I won't do anything for anybody, because I will, just for the sheer joy of it. But, you know, it's something that's, it's a practicality that you can't overlook. And so, you know, I'm putting it out there to the universe. I'm around, I'm good. And, you know, I know you'll post some of my stuff, and you'll post my Flickr page, and take a look.
Yeah,
I'm worth a look, and I'm worth the building of relationships. And I particularly like to reach out to independent, like small businesses, and you know, smaller places who think that, you know, because they're not big companies, they wouldn't have the budget for this. I like the smaller companies and the startups and the mom and pop organizations, because they need to tell their story as much as the larger corporations do. And that's what I'm good at.
That is very true. You know, it's one of the reasons why I took up a camera. As I was told, I was 40 when I was told by the I was put out to pasture by the chemical industry. it's like, oh, I'm not going to get another job? You guys think I'm too old to retrain? Okay. it was kind of interesting. But I agree. Everybody has a story to tell, and that story should be told regardless of your ability to pay. And it feels good when it's like, hey, I did a shoot and the person pays you for it. It really does feel good. It is validating. I agree with you on all those points. You know.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and then the reality is that this is a very competitive town. Mm-hmm. There are lots of very, very talented people out there. And you know, you're always competing against that pool of extremely talented people. But you know, I think I bring a mix of skills that not everybody has, having had the career in PR and the depth of knowledge of social media that I've had over, you know, over 8 years now on social media. And so, you know, the mix is interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, volunteerism is always going to be part of what I do. I'm also quite a busy accessibility advocate, because I'm the vice chair of the Persons with Disabilities Advisory Committee for the City of Vancouver. I've been doing this for over 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that in itself is a very, very busy position to have. We have 14 very, very hardworking people on our committee with a range of disabilities and a range of experience that, you know, it's a wonderful thing to get involved with, but it also consumes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And but we've made a difference to the city. I'm very proud of all the accomplishments we've done. But that's you know, another chunk of me.
Can you go through some of the things that you guys accomplished as a group?
Oh Lord, you know, if you look at some of the issues, you know, some of the concerns that affect all of us, generally speaking, You can imagine how it intensifies if you have a disability of any kind. So, you know, elements like transportation, mm-hmm. you know, housing, you know, accessibility to public buildings, you know, legislation, you know, the entry into, you know, our society of sharing economies, which involves ride sharing and companies like Uber. You know, all of these things present huge concerns. So we work very, very hard with city staff and with other organizations to advise city staff and council on appropriate recommendations or courses of action to help alleviate barriers or at least, if anything, raise the awareness of how these, you know, these aspects of daily life really affect disabled people. And it's an ongoing process. You know, we've been able to, you know, really affect the outcomes of, say, you know, the building bylaws in Vancouver. We've been able to really influence the outcome of the new Pearson development so that, you know, it will be not institutional and very much part of a mixed housing complex over the next several years. You know, we have strongly come out against the elimination of the early bus pass for disabled people who are on PWD benefits. You know, so we're constantly you know, advising, meeting with various groups. I mean, you know, we met, say, with TransLink several times about the Compass Card. We're still, you know, watching that whole situation very carefully. Successfully eliminated TransLink's proposal to get rid of taxi savers a few years ago. We organized several town hall meetings where the disabled community came out in force against that. So, you know, advising committee and council is one thing, galvanizing the community is another. So I think we're all pretty proud of what we've been able to accomplish and are still accomplishing.
So one of the things that we've been talking about here on the show in general is the Fairgate situation.
Mm-hmm.
And are you guys working with TransLink to help them come up with a solution for this Fairgate situation?
Well, I mean, we've been in contact with them on an ongoing basis for years, and certainly the Fairgate situation was something that, you know, we're not the only group out there who's mm-hmm. been in consultation with them for years, but it's difficult. You know, you're not part of that organization. You don't know all the workings.
Right.
You can only do as much as you can do and say this will work, but this won't work. You know, and ultimately, if something doesn't work, how can we help you find a solution? I think, are close to getting a solution they think will work. We'll see. But we're monitoring that, as you know, along with other aspects of what makes transportation in the city, you know, useful and good. There's still things that need, you know, constant kind of monitoring, like, you know, some bus drivers don't like to use the audible signals on the bus or have them so low you can't hear them.
Yeah.
You know, so things like that you encounter just on an ongoing basis as you're, and I use, you know, the transportation system here all the time, probably, you know, 3-4 times a day. So I'm constantly on it. So I'm watching all the time.
Yeah.
There's so many things. There's, you know, bike lanes and the seawall and whether or not pedestrians are protected enough, that sort of thing, too, because that's an issue.
Yes. Well, hang on 1 second, and we need to take care of a little more business here, and we'll be right back.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
They call me
DJ Ray.
The Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. Tune in every Saturday mornings from 12:30 a.m. till late, right after the Medicine Show. Email us, citrlatenightshow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
Did you know CITR has an accessibility collective? Our new collective serves to explore issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with physical and cognitive disabilities on campus and beyond. If you love making radio, listening to radio, or want to get involved for the first time, come join our collective. We include people of all abilities, experience levels, and backgrounds in the production and programming of our show. Tune in to our weekly show, All Access Pass, from 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays for interviews, music, news, events, and awesome dialogues. If you want to get involved, email accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
On Labor Day weekend, September 2nd to the 4th, it's the Bumbershoot Festival 2016 in Seattle, Washington. The festival's got a little something for everyone, with music, comedy, arts, culture, and food. Featuring Chastity Belt, So Pitted, Dude York, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Death Cab for Cutie, and more. Passes are on sale now, so head on over to Bumbershoot.com.
And we're back here on the NCRA Network. You're listening to the Community Living Show, and we're speaking with Kathy Brown, who we just found out is also a champion for accessibility here in Vancouver. And so you were telling
us... I wear many hats, Michael. everybody knows me. I always wear a hat.
I was going to say that's one of your trademarks, isn't it?
Yeah.
We showed up together one time. Well, you were a guest, and I was actually invited as a photographer to Little Black Dress.
Oh, yes.
And every time I've seen you, you've had a very fashionable hat. So. and I like how you put the whole thing together. Kathy also has a curly mop that's about the same as mine. Maybe mine's a little longer or more or less or whatever. But anyway,
one of the reasons you wear a hat is to keep the hair in control.
That's why mine's is always in a braid. is because, we got to keep the hair in control, right?
So, that's right.
Yeah, but you do an excellent job with the with the fashion and
I love hats.
So yeah,
always have. So yes, it's you will always see me in a hat.
Yeah, that's I've never not seen you in a hat.
So. I'm easy to spot.
Yes, and it's There is something about you in general that I can see people just kind of being drawn to you. So,
well, it's interesting because every once in a while, you know, you go into a restaurant or something and you've been before, and you get recognized and you think, oh, it's got to be the hat. You know.
I think in my case it's the shoes, right?
So what else do you want to talk about?
Well, let's get into this because we haven't got into. were you born with a visual impairment, or it is something that just kind of came along?
Well, you know, having you know, given away the age, I was born in the early 50s, mm-hmm. and I was 2 pounds, and you know, as they do at preemies. You know, you're in the incubator, but what they did not know at the time, and, you know, then they know lots more now, is that if you, you know, up the oxygen to make sure the brain and the lungs and everything were kept going, it tended to destroy the very delicate eye tissues.
Yes.
Because of the fact that, you know, babies were that small and not totally developed yet. And that's what happened to tons of people born around the same time as me. So, yes, I've always, you know, yeah. I've always had it.
Yeah. One of my, my one son is very technical medical term is he was a peanut.
Uh-huh.
So he was born at 26 weeks. He was just over a pound. And I described him people have asked me, is like, well, what did he look like when he was born? And I said, well, one, the beanie baby that they put next to him, he was smaller than the beanie baby. And if I open up the palm of my hand, he was the length from the edge of my palm all the way to the tip of my index finger.
Yep.
And they're like, oh. It's like, yeah. So when you said 2 pounds, I was like, I went instantly. It's like, oh, she was a peanut. And when knowing the year, the time, and all that kind of stuff, I got my son got the benefit of the research that was done to find out that, hey, we can't up the oxygen that far. We right. have to keep it at a certain level.
I mean, there are still preemies, and mm-hmm. there's still a lot of things to overcome. But certainly, care of premature babies has really, you know, made leaps and bounds over the decades. But, you know, I always consider myself very lucky because I still have this little bit of sight, because most of the babies it happened to were totally blind. Mm-hmm. And so I used to, years ago, work for CNIB, and I used to do a lot of the public speaking. And I used to talk to various school groups and other groups who used to come in and get tours. And I used to say I, you know, must have been winking at a cute doctor at the time, and that's why I still have a bit of sight in the one eye. But, you know, you count your blessings, because it could have been nothing at all, and I could, you know, have gone a totally different route in my life, and I never would have been a photographer.
Yeah.
Or done any of the other things I've done. And so, you know, you count your blessings.
That is always very true. Mm-hmm. The lessons in gratitude.
And I will mention too that, just as a point of interest for people, you know, I'm not that unique. If you look on Flickr, and Flickr has, you know, many, many different groups, as you probably know, but there is a blind photographers group on Flickr. Mm-hmm. And there are probably about 300 people on there, and take a look at some of their work. It's absolutely astounding. And you know, I get jealous as hell just looking at them and saying, oh, God, I wish I'd been there to capture that or this. Or, and, you know, it goes from everything from, you know, people using their cameras to actually take a picture of their, you know, prescription bottle and blow it up so they could read it, to, you know, being very, very serious and taking pictures of night skies and standing out there for hours to get the right exposure. It runs the gamut, but there are tons of very talented visually impaired photographers out there.
Well, since you want to talk about night shots, you actually sent me what appears to be a night shot of a bridge.
I think it's the Canby Bridge.
Yeah.
It's down by the seawall. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's something I enjoy playing with myself, is reflections.
Yeah, me too. I like it.
Yeah. It just adds an extra dimension of light and texture to the photograph.
Yeah.
You know.
And I will say that I don't Photoshop. I don't really touch anything up. Every once in a while I will crop. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, I will add a little bit of sharpness, but that's all I ever do to my photos. What you see is basically what you get.
Yeah. Sometimes, there's going to be a calendar coming out that I've done work on, and some of those I've put different filters over them because the sky wasn't blowing up. So, but that's it, about it on especially landscapes and things like that. It's like portraits and headshots. Maybe I might do a little more photoshopping, you know, for people, because they have, especially when if you're getting paid to do the portrait, they have a higher expectation, you know.
Sure.
But yeah. But it's like, it's really cool when you can just pull it straight off the camera and then put it up in, or take it.
Well, I like to have people see basically how I saw the world at that minute.
Yeah.
And someone just asked me last night, actually. I was at a little event and I ran into another photographer who recognized my work a little bit, and he said, you know, do you always shoot an auto? And I said, no. You know, I'll shoot an aperture a lot. I don't shoot totally manually because I haven't really gotten to the point where I'm totally comfortable with that. What I rely on is the camera telling me that I'm in a range that it should focus well. And,
yes.
But I don't shoot totally automatic because it's kind of boring. I would like to fiddle with things.
Yeah, it is kind of, you miss some of the texture and you just shoot it, shoot totally automatic.
Right. I love shooting aperture because you do get that depth of field. And I like that because it gives me something I don't have myself, which is depth. I always say I have no depth. Because when you don't see out of two eyes, you don't have depth perception. So the camera allows me to have more depth than I can see myself.
Right.
Which is kind of neat.
Yeah, yeah. I have a multitude of technical questions to ask you over that sort of stuff, but I'm going to avoid those questions.
Oh, all right.
And I'm going to ask you this instead.
Okay.
Who is it that you want to inspire?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily anyone in a particular group. I mean, it's wonderful if I can encourage other visually impaired people to branch out a little bit and you know, rely on their gut and their creativity and you know, grow that a little bit. I think that's important. I like to inspire young women. I you know, it's not always easy being a girl, and especially if you're not, you know, quote unquote perfect. I did a talk at an event called She Talks several months ago, And I was one of the speakers who was invited. And I basically did my entire talk on celebrating imperfection and not feeling like you had to be perfect. And sometimes you can discover a lot more about yourself and what you can do by embracing the fact that you're not perfect. And so those are the types of people I want to encourage. And I think just anybody who's feeling that, you know, there's something in them that they haven't really let come out yet. And that they, if they did, they would discover, you know, a whole new side of themselves they never really thought was there.
Hmm. Wow. That's pretty cool. So it's been great talking to you. And
well, it's been great talking to you. I can't believe that hour flew by so
quickly. Yes.
I was like, and I can't believe my cat didn't make any noise all the way through this either.
Oh, I was hoping to hear a cat, too.
No, they've been good. I think I gave him the evil eye in the beginning and said, you know, just, you know, calm down and shut up, and they did.
Yeah. So I'd love to have you come back again.
Oh, I'd love to do that. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it's been a great morning so far. So, yeah. So, again, we've been talking with Kathy Brown, a photographer here in Vancouver. So, and it's time to sign off and say goodbye to everyone. And I hope everyone has a great and awesome day. All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kathy. Care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smokey every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Above.